Welcome to Soundbites, true stories told by local Mainers and nationally recognized storytellers. The themes are always changing and the hosts are from all over the nation, but when you hear the name Soundbites, you're in for a unique storytelling experience. Soundbites is made possible by the generous contributions of Allagash Brewing, Frontier, The Press Hotel, and by the listeners of Maine Public Radio. This story was told at Frontier in Brunswick, where the event's dedicated theme was Weed It Out. Here's today's host, storyteller and ceramic craftsman from New Jersey, Peter Aguero.
So we have one more story for you this evening, and I'm going to tell it. All right, so I walk into this place I've never been to before in Long Island City in Queens, a neighborhood that I never had any reason to go to before. I open the door, and the first thing I notice is there's this dust everywhere with footprints leading around. And I open up the second door, and there's kind of this strange gallery shop of all these odd and bizarre created things. Some are in shapes I understand, like teapots and mugs, and some are way more abstract and look like they serve no functional purpose at all. Then I walk into the studio proper, and I look over to the right, and there's this wall full of shelves, and there's like bowls and pieces of chain and cornstarch and vinegar and like things that shouldn't be next to each other on a shelf. I don't understand that, and they're labeled tools. I'm like, tools for what? Like, what could this possibly be? This place that's just full of just these weird people just in a daze wandering around. This woman approaches me, and she's wearing sandals and socks, and they're purple and pink, and she has this loud shock of blonde hair that looks like she's been happily cutting it herself for the last 40 years, and that's the way she prefers it. And she comes up to me and she says, are you here for Peter? And I say, I am Peter. And she goes, what? I said, what? And she goes, I'm Liberty. And I said, what? I'm Liberty Valance. I said, how's that possible? And that's when I knew, when this red-bearded kid with bloodshot eyes, who's like very carefully painting this graffiti character on the side of this giant bowl, and he starts laughing at our exchange, I realized that this is where the weirdos are. And this is where I'm going to belong. Like, this is going to be the right place. I'm supposed to be in the Island of Misfit Toys, you know? And then a door opens toward the back, and this man approaches me, and I'm struck. My jaw just about hits the floor. It's me in the future. He's a burly guy with a big gray beard, and his hair's in a bun in the back, and he's got these kind eyes and big strong hands, and he comes up and he says, my name's Peter. And I said, so's mine. And he says, you're here for class. I said, yes, I am. He says, okay, come with me. And we walk over to where they have these wheels, and he says, all right, I already got the clay, and listen, the only rule that I have here is that we just have a good time. Everything else doesn't matter. And I needed that so bad. 5 days before that, I'm laying on my living room floor, and I'm crying, and I can't get up. And I'm stuck as if the side of my face was somehow like, you know, gorilla glued to the rug in our living room. And my wife is trying as hard as she can to do anything to make me feel better. She's reading my tarot cards. She's brushing my hair. She's like doing everything to try to get me to feel better. I'm in the middle of trying to write a new show, and I don't care about it. I just don't care. And I break down, and I'm crying on the floor, and I just can't do it. For the last probably 10 years, 11 years of my life, you know, I've been some kind of performing artist for the last 20 years. I did improv and stage acting and on-camera acting and off-off-Broadway plays and off-off-off-Broadway plays and off-off-off-off-off-Broadway weird experimental stuff and like things where you're naked and burlesque as a host and a performer and like all kinds of, man, all kinds of stuff. And my biggest bread and butter in the last couple years was first-person autobiographical narrative, which is just a fancy way to say storytelling. I had started telling stories at these shows and these bars all around New York, and it was this really beautiful thing that I fell in love with. It was a way for me to get my younger self that nobody was listening to. It was a way to get his voice heard. I feel like when I was a kid, I was invisible. And as I got in front of people and started telling stories about kind of those things that happened to me when I was growing up, I realized that you know, I could give voice to that kid, and it felt really good, and I just kept doing it. But the problem with that is, generally the things that I loved about telling stories, the people that I met were great, and the traveling was great. I got to go all over the world. I've been all over the country. I've been all over North America. I've been to Europe telling stories for a while. I worked for Glenn Fittick. My job for 2 years was to fly around Europe and drink whiskey and tell stories. It was a great job. It was the best job. Best job. The best job you could ever have. It was so good. But like, the things that I loved about storytelling were the stories about change. And the thing about change is it doesn't happen in your successes. When something happens in your life, when something has happened in my life that I was able to succeed at, all that meant really is that it was something I already kind of knew how to do. But the real change happens. Like, the real juicy stuff with our stories are about a moment where we're faced with a crossroads and we have to make a choice, whether to give up or to keep fighting, whether to crumple down on the floor or to keep going or find another path. And those happen in our pain and in our failure. Our pain and our failure are some of our biggest gifts, because that's how we grow. However, since I wasn't just doing storytelling at this point, since I was making the majority of my money doing this first-person autobiographical narrative, since I wasn't just telling stories anymore, I was trying to make a living out of it, I was commodifying my pain. And that was my medium. Had been for years, it just turned into just, how can I bleed? Just how can I bleed? And it kept going for a while. And I, again, some great gigs and lots of opportunity. It was really good, and I had all kinds of things happening. But in 2015, a lot of those opportunities happened to dry up just because things just happened, and I had forgotten, like any person who decides to be an artist for their career, that every once in a while you hit a plateau, and every time you hit a plateau, you have to remember, oh yeah, this is a plateau. I'll figure it out later. It'll be okay. But every time, it takes you by surprise. And this one was ripping me to shreds, man. I couldn't do it. And I was trying to figure out, well, maybe I can tour again, but I need to write a new show. I just spent the last couple years touring with an hour-long show called Daddy Issues, about growing up with and without my dad. Really light. Lighthearted, very light, very super lighthearted stuff. If you've ever wanted to hear like 40 people crying silently in a dark room, come see Daddy Issues. Luckily, when I started doing that show, I also had started going to therapy. So, like, you know, things were, one informed the other, which informed the first, and went back and forth for a couple years until I was okay, except for this moment. And time was going on. I tried to write this new show, and I was convinced it was going to be a comedy. It was going to be about this year in my life that started off with me on July 4th of, in 1998 going to a barbecue, and July 4th, 1999, getting beaten by a hammer by this other, when I used to drive an ice cream truck in New Jersey. I thought that was going to be a comedy. Look, that's where I was, okay? Turns out it was a psychological horror story, and I was very wrong. So as I'm trying to figure out, I'm like, there's nothing in my life that I want to talk about anymore. What is the point of all this? I can't do this, and I'm just crying, and my wife is brushing my long, luxurious hair. And she's, and again, reading my tarot cards, just trying to find an answer. And then she grabs me by the sides of the face. She says, Peter, you need to take a pottery class. And I just look at her. I was like, what? And she goes, you need to take a pottery class. And I was searching for answers, and she usually has been giving me my answers for a long time. So I was like, okay. And, when I stopped crying that night, we eventually went to bed. And the next night, she said, Peter, have you registered for a pottery class yet? I said, no. She said, I'm going to take a shower, and by the time I get out of the shower, I want you registered for a pottery class. So I said, okay. So she got in the shower. I got on my computer. I'm looking for pottery classes in New York City. I find one in Queens that's right in Long Island City, 2 miles from my house, a place called Brick House Ceramic Arts. I love the Commodores, so I'm like, all right, Brick House. So like that sounds about right. So, I register online to take a 1 hour wheel class, and I've never done this in my life. Man, when I was a little boy, I played with Play-Doh. I would make I had a little E.T. doll that I brought with me everywhere. I would make little houses for it out of construction paper, and I would, Friday nights, I would arrange my broken toys in the corner into like this kind of artistic, whatever, you know, whatever you do before you can, you know, figure yourself out and you're in your own way. That's why, like, but that was the only physical kind of representation of emotions I'd ever made, and I'm stuck because I'm questioning the worth of everything that I had been making over the last 20 years. Was ephemeral. It was spoken, and in the moment it was spoken and received, but then once the show was over, it didn't exist anymore, and I started to question the value of that. I understood that maybe it touched people and made people not feel like they were alone, but the finality of that and like the kind of effervescence of that art form has been, which served me for so long, kind of stopped serving me. I stopped believing in it, you know? So I walk in to the studio and I'm sitting down with this guy, Peter, and he's like I said, he's me 30 years in the future, this big, burly, handsome, kind of weird looking handsome, let's be honest, like a unfrozen caveman handsome, like just kind of like lumpy face, but like you look at him, that's striking kind of handsome, but like, he has this gentle voice, and he's telling me what to do. Like, first, this is how we center the clay, and you got to make sure it doesn't move. And I say, how do you know it's centered? He says, you just know. And that's like, what? And then he's like, okay, now we're going to drop the first hole. And then I drop the first hole, and it's just amazing. And before every movement, he tells me, okay, before we do anything, we're going to take a breath and center ourselves and then make a movement. And he's speaking in my ear with this beautiful, calm, amazing voice. After a while, he keeps going, but I stop hearing the actual words that he's saying. All that I hear is, just breathe, and you make a movement, and the shape changes. And you take a breath, and you make a movement, and the shape changes. And you take a breath, and you make a movement, and the shape changes. And pretty soon, I've got this wobbly bowl. And then he says, that's pretty good. Do you want to make another one? I said, yeah. And we take it off the wheel and we put down another one. He's speaking this voice in my ear, and it's lulling me into this state and the movement of the wheel, and everything is happening, and I can see it all at once. It's like stuff that I never knew I knew how to do, but all of a sudden it's unlocking something in my brain that I just feel like I was kind of put on the earth to do. And I take a breath and I make a movement and the shape changes, and then I get a little bit of a less wobbly bowl with a nice little rim on it. It's got a good shape. And he says, you've never done this before? And I said, no, I never had done this before. He says, oh, well, you should do it some more. And the hour's over like that. And I stand up, and of course, me in the future is a really good hugger. So he gives me, future Peter gives present Peter a really big hug, or present Peter gives past Peter a big hug, depending on your point of view. And we look at each other, and I tell him how much I needed this, that like my head has been full of bees, and I haven't been able to calm it down, and I'm not sure what I'm doing with my life, and I needed a thing that would kind of give me some focus and some time. And of course, me in the future is a crier, because me in the present is a crier, and me and my future self are crying, and we hug again, and we're just like, it feels so good to be held by myself, and feeling the tears of myself on my own shoulder. It's the most amazing feeling. I recommend it if you ever get a chance. And that night, I go. When it's all done, he says he'll glaze them for me. I'll be able to pick them up. And I get home, and first thing I do is I get back on the computer. I register for a full semester of classes, and I sit on the couch. And my wife says that I sat in the couch and I was just smiling in this daze. And she heard me say, as if no one could hear, that I didn't want anyone to hear. I was like, I can't believe they let me do that. It feels so good. I think I love it. And she was so happy because it's been a long time since she's seen me that happy about anything. And it'll be on October 26th of this year. It'll be my third Potterversary. I took a big, long hiatus from performing, and I just concentrated on making bowls and mugs, and they got less and less wobbly, and now I make all kinds of weird stuff. I make, I love making mugs because they're functional, they're intimate, they're something you nourish yourself with, and you hold in your hand, and they touch your lips, and they hold your soul, and they're beautiful, and you can't doubt the value of those pieces. I also make pipes because you can smoke weed out of them, and like, if you can't be a pipe maker, what better, come on, be a pipe maker if you can. It's great, and they make you feel good too. But the biggest thing that I realized was that, you know, for years my medium had been my past, and you can't change your past. every time I told a story, the value of it was not lost. I understand what the value is now. I learned something brand new every time I told one of those stories. Every time I told one of those stories about the period of my life where I hurt, something in me now kind of grew a little bit. And that value, I understand it now, and I'm very grateful to it. But I can't change the past, and I didn't want to swim around in my pain anymore. And right now, what I'm doing is this medium, this clay and this expression, is the medium of my future. I can make things while I'm honoring who I've been and I'm honoring who I am now. I can make things for who I wish I could be in the future. I can make things that make me feel strong, and I can make things that make me feel confident, and I can make things that make me feel good. And all I gotta do is just take a breath and make a move, and the shape changes. And you take a breath and you make a move, and the shape changes. And you take a breath and you make a move, and the shape changes. Thank you.
Peter Aguero was born and raised in southern New Jersey. He's a Moth Grand Slam champion and has been an instructor for the Moth Community Program. He spends most of his days making ceramics in Queens. His most recent show, Daddy Issues, has been performed in the far reaches and middle grounds of North America. If you've never heard someone ask themselves their own questions, get ready. It's kind of funny. We're going to learn more about our host here on Soundbites.
What is your connection to Maine? I guess the first time I was in Maine was in 1997. I went to the Great Went, a fish show up in Limestone. And I've probably been to Maine a dozen times since then. Also, Michael Sargent, Soundbites, doing a Moth show in Portland. And also the weirdest people I've ever met in my life, they always end up being from Maine. What got you into storytelling? Man, I just figured if I started talking about my life, the ridiculous of it would be kind of normalized in my head. And it ended up giving voice to younger versions of myself that nobody was listening to. So there's a lot of benefits there. What is your process for preparing to tell a story? I kind of think about the place where the story took place and think about as many details as I can imagine, try to bring myself back to that place. And I don't really write my stories down. I'm more try to be as extemporaneous as I can, and it allows for a discovery of memories as I'm remembering them. So it's pretty loose. Tell us about one part of your story that you're not including in your telling tonight. I guess generally some of the specific weirdos at the studio, particularly late at night when most of the people are home after 11 o'clock, gets real strange with the clay.
Soundbites is made possible by the generous contributions of Allagash Brewing, Frontier, The Press Hotel, and by the listeners of Maine Public Radio. Special thanks also to Toad & Co. More information about Soundbites, including how to attend a live storytelling event, is online at soundbitesme.org. And of course, you can always hear more stories at mainepublic.org.